For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
But I think one of the things that's probably hardest about it is that sometimes we lose our special friends to Jesus earlier than we want them to go. And this happened in my church just a couple weeks ago with, you can see Paul up there, a young man. He was 22 years old. His name is Paul, and he had Down syndrome. And Paul was a great guy. He was in our ministry from the beginning. And you always knew, Paul had a presence. You always knew where Paul was. Paul never met a stranger. Paul also was probably one of the most stubborn people walking the face of the earth. But he was a great guy. He just, he loved Jesus. He loved people unconditionally. There were hundreds of people at his funeral a couple weeks ago. I mean, hundreds of people. And he impacted so many people. The first thing Paul would often say to you when he saw you is, got a buck for a Coke? Or he'd say, you want to go out for pizza for lunch? And of course, the last couple of years of his life, he couldn't do either of those things, but that's, you know, that was Paul. But then after he got that part, past that part, and you said, sorry, Paul, no money, you know, or whatever, he'd go on and say, how you doing today? Are you having a good day? And he immediately flip his focus to you. And he always ended with, if he was talking to a guy, it was, you know, I love you, man. Or if he was talking to me, because oftentimes when I was interacting with Paul, I was trying to block him from going to the donut table, which was his favorite place to go. And he wasn't supposed to be having, you know, he was a diabetic among many other things and wasn't supposed to be having three donuts on a Sunday morning. And so Paul was quite a bit bigger than me, and I'd be standing there with my hands on my hips trying to block his way and go, Paul, you are not going to the donut table. And then he'd go, Donna, you know I love you. And I mean, but he truly did, you know, if you had an argument with him, he'd call you later. Paul had an incredible memory for numbers. You never gave him your cell phone number because he'd call you all the time. He didn't ever look in the cell phone. Fit. They finally had to take his cell phone away because he bothered so many people, to be honest. But he just would remember. He never put a number in. He just would remember them. And I found, actually, I didn't know this. He used to tell my pastor, and I didn't know, find this out till his funeral, that he wanted to be a preacher. And so, Paul, you never knew what was going to come out of Paul's mouth. And one day he had, you know, he often asked, can I give the lesson today, or can I share, do whatever. And so one day we'd given him permission to do the lesson. And so he came, he was all excited. He was a little younger then. And he brought out a banana, bruised, kind of ugly banana, and proceeded to say that this banana is what you look like before Jesus. And then he went about peeling it. And he said, this is what you look like with Jesus. Paul, he never knew his life was limited. He never knew limitations. He lived life to the fullest, and he loved Jesus. And that's what he wanted everybody else to do. And he knew how to teach it because he lived it. He never, you know, he truly loved people unconditionally. And our friends with special needs, really, it's an incredible, I'll tell you, if you're not doing it, you're missing a lot. Let's go on to some statistics. One of the things that we talk about at Johnny and Friends is that we're not into numbers. In the words of Jim Pearson, who some of you may be familiar with, he's been doing disability ministry for years and partnered with Johnny and Friends many, many years. And he says that we do Jesus mathematics because we leave the 99 and we go for the one and seek out the one. And we have a Jesus way of doing things. We don't worry about numbers. We welcome that one family member. And but interestingly enough, when we welcome that one family member, of course, they bring their immediate family. Oftentimes, they bring their extended family. Then they bring their friends from school, or their friends at MRDD, or their friends at therapy, or because the word spreads. And so, in fact, it grows quite large in a very, you know, in a relatively short time. The picture up here is Natalie and her parents. And one of the other things about welcoming families with disabilities is Natalie is from my church. And it happens now because Natalie, they are very comfortable with leaving Natalie with us. They come to both services on Sunday morning. And in one, they go and worship. And in the second one, Mom goes and teaches a children's class. And Dad goes and leads an adult Bible fellowship in ABF. And so they are able to use their gifts and give back to the church the way God intended us to do. Depending on what U.S. report you read, there are somewhere between 49 and 54 million people with disabilities in this country. That's about 1 in 5 people, and many of these people are children. Yet, most churches do not have children with disabilities in their Sunday school classes. You know, why is this? Only 15% of families that are affected by disability are raising their children in the church. Less than 11% of churches do any type of intentional outreach to people with disabilities. Many families have been disinvited from the church that they attend, or they do not go to church because they have another church. It's called MRDD, Easter Seals, Social Services. They actually do a much better job than we do as the body of Christ at meeting the needs of families affected by disability. There is a young man in our church. He has autism, and he's not real severe, you know, maybe moderate, minimal to moderate autism. And his father used to pastor a church in Indiana until he was asked to leave because he didn't have the right kind of family. I cannot tell you how many times that families have come to our church and they all have a very similar story, to be honest. I can't tell you how many churches I was asked to leave. I can't tell you how many times when I'd walk in the church and I'd try to take my child to Sunday school, they say, you cannot leave this classroom, you need to stay with them. So why bother? That is a very, very common story. Over 80% of marriages affected by disability will become single parent families in this country. That has resulted actually in the development that up there, sorry. And Johnny and Friends of our family retreat program. And our family retreat program is just an awesome, awesome program, which you'll hear about later in the workshops. But it was developed, you know, initially just to strengthen marriages and support single parents because the need is so huge. Okay. What is the basis of disability ministry? Anybody have an idea what our basis is? Besides biblical, of course. Basically, that we value people. We value each person for who they are and what they are because they are God created. How do you show someone you value them? This is a interaction type now. How do you show somebody you tell them you love them? Sure. How else do we? Yes.
Spend time with them.
Spend time with them.
Sacrifice.
Yes. You guys are good. But you're going way too hard. What's the easiest thing you show someone you value them? Look them in the eye. Wave at them. Acknowledge them. You know how many people with disabilities don't, you know, people will turn away or walk around them because they're afraid to engage with them? There's a story that my friend Deb told me in her church that happened in her church with a young man. He was 13 years old at the time, Joshua. Joshua was on the autism spectrum. And in her church, they take their special needs classroom kids that can go into the worship part of the service initially where, you know, during the music. And then they leave after the music and they go on back to their classroom and continue with the lesson. And so they were leaving from worship one morning, and there was one of the other kids was having a little bit of a difficulty making it back to the classroom, so that the teacher was pulled away to that child, and Joshua went off and saw this woman sitting in the back row of the church, and she obviously had a vision impairment, had, you know, thick glasses on, that type of thing. And when the teacher went back to get him, and he said, "Mrs. P, what's wrong with her? Why does she have those glasses?" And the woman very graciously said, "I'm blind." And so they took off and got 10 or 20 feet down the hall, and Joshua ran back, started looking at her again, and of course he, you know, didn't have that ability to have personal space. That concept wasn't there, so he was right in her face each time he interacted with her. And the teacher went back, he said, "Mrs. P, what's blind?" And so the woman graciously said, "I can't see." They took off again. And got 20 feet down the hall, and Joshua bolted back to the woman again and said, and when the teacher caught up with him again and said, "Mrs. P, I think we need to pray for her eyes." And he said, I want to make sure I get this right. He put his hand on her shoulder, and this is what he prayed. "Jesus, I ask that you would lift your mighty right hand and heal her eyes in Jesus' name." And then he was gone, off to the classroom. Mother Teresa once said, and I believe it was when she was being interviewed for on a TV station, and they had asked her, what is the greatest need? And expecting, of course, her to say food or money or something like that. And she said, the need to be noticed. So that's what we're about in disability ministry. We want to make sure that we recognize that they are worthy of salvation. Because that is the essence of all of us. All of us have souls. All of us need salvation. All of us yearn for it until we find it. Much of the world doesn't realize that's what they're yearning for, but we know that that's what they're yearning for. And the disability is not who they are. Second thing is, we try not to make disability ministry special. We just want to do what they need. We just happen to do, or we just do ministry to people that happen to have a disability. Okay, now that looks a lot of different ways, but it adds a whole lot of fun because we get to do it a lot of different, use a lot of different ways to do it. Okay, oh, I have my thing up. One of the things I'd like to talk about for a minute is the family perspective. And understanding the life of a parent when they first find out that a child is disabled, which is typically at birth, what happens to them at that time? It's kind of like if somebody, you know, is in the U.S., they go in to have their child, and all of a sudden they are transported to Italy. They don't understand the language. They don't know where they are. They don't know who to turn to. They don't understand the system. And they are totally overwhelmed because it can be such a crushing blow at that time. They're, you know, as all expected parents, you know, I'm a mom of three kids, and, you know, you have your hopes and your dreams when they're born, you're planning for their future. All of a sudden, it's changed. They're afraid. They don't know. What's going to happen. They don't understand what's going on. They don't even understand all the language the doctors are throwing at them. So it's a whole different world that they've just been thrust into. All of a sudden, they have a whole set of demands on their life that they've never had before. Many times, two-parent families that were working, two-parent families, are now working, one parent working, and one parent staying home. And that obviously has economic impact, along with all of the medical impact already, just lots and lots of things. They, because they're so overwhelmed with everything, they become isolated. They don't have the ability to, you know, go out with their friends and do all this because they're so consumed by the needs of this child. If they have a child that happens to not appear or behave in acceptable, by the world's terms anyway, ways, when they go out in public, they get rejected. They get looked at, they get spurned, they get commented on, they, you know, just a whole variety of things. And to be honest, and if any of you will be honest with me here, you know, there was a time years ago when, before I got into this and really recognized, you know, where you'd be in the old Kroger line, and there was the mom with the kid up front going nuts. And you think, why can't that mom control their kid? You know? And I did it. I admit it. I did it. And even once in a while now, I find myself going down that road, and I went, wait a minute, because how do we know that that child's not autistic? That child doesn't have ADHD? That child doesn't have something else? That mom is just desperately trying to get the few groceries she needs to get through the next couple of days and get out of the store. So now I think, how can I help them? What can I do? But if you're honest, you'll probably admit we've all had those thoughts, you know, when we've seen something like that. And not that there aren't the kids that are misbehaving. But or the adults that are misbehaving. But these parents face a lot of rejection. And few churches, to be honest, are equipped to handle them, especially kids on the autism spectrum and those unseen disabilities that are becoming so prevalent now and are just, you know, increasing at an exponential rate. They're not ready. But we'll help you with that. Without God's perspective, many families feel that their child was born as a mistake or because of an uncaring God. Many families, when they have a child born with a disability, go through a period of anger, with Christian, non-Christian, at God as to why. Why did you let this happen? Why would you do this? Why did you create my child this way? Without God's perspective, a lot of caregivers are motivated by pity. Not a great motivation. We would like them to be motivated by love and love that child for who they are, not because they feel so sorry and whatever and that type of thing. And many families are overwhelmed and don't see productive purposes, you know, in their child's life. They can't see down the line what's going to happen. At family retreat a number of years ago, I was assigned a child. This was back when I was volunteering. My family and I volunteered at family retreat for years. And I received a child whose name was Issy. Issy was autistic. And she and her mother and her brother arrived. And not knowing, they came at the last minute. There was one word on the form, said autistic, didn't know a thing about her. Well, Issy wasn't just autistic, she was pretty severely autistic. She lived about 90% of her time in her own world. She was non-communicative for the most part. And she was a bolter. She'd just take off and run. She'd be sitting one second and gone the next. And so we were seen running through camp a lot that week because Issy'd go and then I'd be right behind her. And so we were well known. I couldn't told you what happened at camp that week because I was so focused on Issy because I, you know, it just changed like that. But over the course of a week, it was really cool because Issy changed. And Issy started, we kept trying to work into the group and doing things like that. And on the last day, she participated in a game in her group with other kids. That was huge for Issy. But that wasn't the only thing. She did a whole lot of things that week. And it was really neat for this mom who had come, not knowing if the husband had who had left her 6 weeks before would ever come back, which he didn't, by the way, with these two autistic kids. Her brother was also on the spectrum, although milder. And, you know, just having absolutely no hope. And as she saw Issy change over the week and all these firsts that Issy accomplished, it was just huge. The camp saw Issy change and how it impacted the whole camp. So they saw God's purpose in Issy's life unfolding throughout the week. And the mom saw a new purpose and a new hope for Issy's future. Issy is the reason that I went home and started my disability ministry at my church, because I came to realize it wasn't good enough to be accessible. Our church was very accessible. But we didn't have anything to welcome parents like this, especially single parents. Almost 85% of them are single-parent families. Where do they put a child like Issy if you don't have some place for them to go or some way to welcome them or someone to greet them and say, you know what, I'll take care of her for you. Go to church. So, and our church now has three classrooms on Sunday morning. We have a body program at both hours of worship, and we also do respite, Friday night respite programs, and are hoping to start an adult program. But that all came out of Issy, and Mom knows that now, and she's, you know, she saw that hope for Issy's life and for the future through that. Myths and truths. There are a lot of myths about disability ministry out there. The first one is you need a lot of money. Is my picture going to come up? There it goes. Obviously, as you can see from the wall of this particular classroom that was taken a picture of, you don't need a lot of money. Actually, you probably have everything you need to start a disability ministry in whatever setting you're in right now. You raid the preschool room, you raid a couple other areas, and you got it. For the first 8 months that I had, you know, that when we had started the disability in my church, we had no budget. So people, we put some requests in the bulletin, we raided a few rooms for a few toys, and we were set. It is something that is very, very easy to set up. Second myth, you need a lot of space. As you can see from this picture, you don't need a lot of space in a classroom. You just need a classroom that's accessible. Now, this happens to be a picture of teens and young adults in a classroom, so it's more of a standard classroom setting. But in our children, it looks a little different, obviously, and Deb will be talking about that in the next workshop. But even there, you can take, you know, a part of a room that's already a preschool room or a children's Sunday school room cordon off a corner of that and use that if you need to. Whatever. There's many, many options. You don't need a lot of space, and you actually don't need any space to start one, which we'll go into later. Third myth, you can't get volunteers. Our volunteers range in age from young teens to seniors. And for any of you children's ministry people out there who think that we're going to steal people from your ministry because you're also desperately trying to cover those children's classrooms that are usually full to overflowing in most churches nowadays, we don't. We don't pull the same people. I had a pastor ask me the other day, why don't you pull the same people? And actually, I don't have a good reason. I can just tell you, and Deb, I think, will support this from many years of experience, that the people that come to serve in disability ministry don't really care to lead a regular classroom. I can tell you, I can go with our children's director, and she'll go into a room with 700 kids with the music blaring, and kids are all around, and they're coming up to her, Miss Mary Jane, this, Miss Mary, and it's like, get me out of here. I go in my classroom with five autistic kids bouncing off the walls, and she's like, you know, and I'm like, what's wrong? This is great. You know, we're having a blast in here. It pulls different people, and so it's not a threat to your regular children's ministry volunteers, but they will come. You don't need a special ed degree. You don't need to know about disabilities. We can train them in very simple ways. You need a willing heart to serve, and you will find volunteers. Trust me, they will come. The Lord will bless your efforts. Next myth. You need a whole new curriculum and teachers. I have never used a different curriculum ever in my church, because my church happens to require that we are all on the same curriculum at the same time. I have never taught another church to use a different curriculum, because all you need to do is change how you present that curriculum. You want to go for the basics and get the main point. And sometimes we don't go into the detailed stories because that's not where it needs to be. But they need to get the main point. You need to be simple, clear in how you present it, and then you're going to use all kinds of different formats, and we'll go through a lot of those formats later in the next workshop again, because you're going to use a format that they understand. If you look at that slide, you'll see a bunch of colored paper across the top. And it's not real clear, you can't see the writing on it. But that is something that we recommend in churches. It tells the gospel story via the colors. If you've ever heard of the gospel bracelet, where you tell the gospel story in colors, it's a great thing to do, because that's, at our church anyway, the way we do it, that's our default. If we're not getting anywhere that Sunday with the regular story or whatever, or it's kind of one of those meltdown days, and those happen, you know, some days we get tons of lesson in, and other days it's just like, okay, well, Lord, you had other plans today. We survived, and everybody was safe, and everybody did okay, but we didn't get a lot of lesson time. That's just life. I mean, that's just the way it is. But we're not a babysitting service. We are there to teach them the gospel story. And that teaches the gospel, and that's always our default story, is to go to that. And we say, now, what's this color? You know, black sin. What's sin? Oh, that's why I don't listen to my mom, you know, or whatever. And you take it to a different level, and you use different things. But you do not need specialized curriculum or specialized teachers. It's a very, very easy. Next myth. People with disabilities will be a burden on your church and will not add any value. This top picture is a picture of a family from Family Retreat. They have two kids with disabilities, and they're both leaders in their church and do a variety of things within their church. And of course, you might recognize the bottom slide. So do they not add to your church? Absolutely not. You will experience new life. You will experience new gifts. And your church will be blessed. It is biblical, because in Luke 14, back in 12 to 14, when Jesus describes how to have a banquet, he says, don't invite your neighbors and the rich that can repay you, but go out and invite the poor and the lame and the blind, because they cannot repay you, but you will be blessed. And I guarantee that your church will be blessed if you do this. And the last thing is, as far as the flip side of that is a truce, is come to Johnny and Friends and ask us, and we will help you. That is our mission statement for Johnny and Friends. It is to communicate the gospel and equip Christ-honoring churches worldwide to evangelize and disciple people affected by disabilities. That is what we do. We equip churches. We're well known for some of our programs like Family Retreat and Wheels for the World. You may be familiar and heard some of those, especially if you listen to Christian radio and hear Johnny, because she'll talk about those. But really, what we are about is equipping churches. And we do it in group settings like this, and we also come alongside you one by one and help you. And we never charge for it, but it's something that is what we're about. So if you need to find out the truth about disability ministry, come to us and we'll help you. I'd like to go through with just quickly what the next workshops are about. Deb will be doing this afternoon, the second workshop, which is going to talk about the buddy classroom connection. And we're going to talk about how do you set up a buddy system. The easiest, quickest, fastest thing is a buddy system. I had a meeting with a church last week, and they said, we have three kids with autism coming. We don't know what to do with them. And it was like, okay, you can do this. You've already had some people go to Family Retreat, which is a great training ground, so they're trained. And so you can do a buddy system. It doesn't take space. It just takes some commitment and some people and a little bit of planning. And we'll walk you through all of that. On the flip side of that, it's always nice to have a classroom. As your disability ministry grows, it usually requires some type of a space. And to give these kids with a lot of sensory problems a place to get away from what's a normal setting oftentimes, because a lot of our kids' programs nowadays are designed to be loud and lights and all this stuff, and for some of our kids, oh my goodness, you don't want to go there. Some of you are laughing out there, so you know what I'm talking about. So that does help. And again, it's not a hard thing to set up, but we will take you through a lot of those steps. The next workshop is on preparing the heart of the church. One of the things that we really emphasize and feel that you need to do at Johnny and Friends is prepare your church for disability ministry, to prepare your leaders, get your leaders on board and have them understand, and then prepare the church. And there are some, again, very easy ways to do this. And one great tool that we use is what we call Disability Awareness Sunday. And it brings the whole church kind of on board and lets them know, wow, we have this great new program. And we will teach you how to do. But some of the different things that are available to help you get your church on board with you. Because one thing you need to be careful of is probably the most challenging thing about disability ministry is that it's labor intensive. We're a lot of one-on-one. And so you want to recruit that team. And you don't want to go out at this alone because you'll burn out. And that's not what it's about. The Lord will bless and will teach us some key things to do to prepare your church and bring you volunteers and get everybody on board. And then the last workshop that we're doing, which is on tomorrow morning, will be about some of the many resources and tools that we have created in Johnny and Friends. I wish actually we had, and I know Deb does because she's been doing this longer than I have, we had these tools back when we started our disability ministries. Because, boy, when you're doing it without any direction, it can become very hard. But we have created tons of stuff that really makes it easy. And it's all reproducible, and it's very inexpensive. I mean, we're in the ministry of giving our ministry away. The more people we can get doing disability ministry, the happier we are. And so there are a lot of really good resources. They're all, like I said, reproducible. You can just tweak them for your church that will give you a lot of tools so you don't have to recreate the wheel. Don't take that time. I think of the time that my team and I spent initially doing training manuals and things like that, and it's just like, oh, if we had only had this back then. So please, we have a whole table out there of resources. That's primarily what's on there. But that's what we'll be talking about on Friday morning. And of course, Johnny tonight, as you know, she's in the schedule, will be a keynote speaker, and she'll be talking about leading with limitations and how to turn brokenness into blessing. And I would strongly encourage you, if you've never had the opportunity to hear Johnny, do stay around. She is an incredible speaker and just an incredible encourager. And you will learn a lot from Johnny. So that is kind of Johnny and Friends' schedule here. One of the things I want you to do is recognize that you are working on the eternal. When you are working with children, adults, whomever, with disabilities. This is not just, this is what the gospel is all about, really, is making it understandable for all people. We have a short DVD that I want to show you. And Colin, you can go ahead and cue that up, and we'll play that for a minute.
Children and whatever you give.
We just truly believe that God gave us this gift and God is going to use it for His glory.
I see the purpose with her. I mean, I see the bigger picture.
Said, Lord, they're your children, and whatever you give us, we will accept and we'll take.
My initial feeling was because of our faith, we knew that whatever God handed us, that He had something in mind. So we knew that she would be, our reaction was she'd be as much of a gift as our other two daughters, but at the same time there were a lot of fears.
And we said, okay, he's not talking, he's not looking at us, he's not communicating the way she's communicating. So we had him assessed, and they told us he has autism, and it's such a foreign word, you don't know what it is.
I really come to understand that the gospel is really a simplistic message that we have often come to overlook. I think St. Francis of Assisi put it best when he said, always preach the gospel, use words if necessary. And that's really what the special needs ministry is. We are modeling the touch of Christ, the compassion of Christ, the love of Christ to children and families that aren't always able to give up back in return.
Wouldn't it be great if wouldn't it be great if our children, you know, that they went through school and they all got good grades, that when they played sports they were the star player, that our jobs worked out, but when things don't work out, it's the struggle that makes us go on. It's the struggle in dealing with a disabled child that gives them value.
You know, there's actually a lot of fear in terms of people stepping out into special needs ministry. It really takes a measure of faith to step out into the unknown. And so people tend to stay away from what they don't understand. And yet the amazing thing is in Luke chapter 14, there's actually a mandate that Christ gave to the church, that you go out and you bring the disabled into your church so that God's house will be filled. It'll be full, overflowing with the disabled. And yet that is a mandate that most of the church has ignored. And it's a commission, but for the church it's been an omission. They have ignored the very biblical mandate to go out and bring the disabled into the house of the Lord. So there's significant scriptural reference that churches need to reach out to the disability community.
Lying there in bed, a million miles away from the ways of the world. I'm watching you sleeping in the stillness of the night, but I hear the distant thunder from the ways of the world.
Questions. I'm going to have Deb come up and join me. I guess I don't think I introduced myself. My name is Donna Hughes. I am the area director for Johnny and Friends Ohio. Our area ministry office is located down in Xenia, and we have an extension office here in Columbus. Deb Peterman is our staff here in Columbus. We also have an extension office up north in northeast Ohio. And so, oh, Johnny's here. Johnny, would you like to come up and share a story or two? She should have, I believe she has a mic on her. This is our non-ADA compliant map here. Oh, she's not on yet. Hold.
Hi, everybody. Good to see you.
I hope that you gained much from Donna's presentation, and especially that video. Isn't that a touching video? It really is. Donna wanted me to share just a couple of thoughts, and I guess before questions and answers, and sometimes you just don't know what to say when you're connecting with somebody with a disability. How much to help, how little to help, what not to do, what to do. I remember one time when I was downtown Chicago, and it was a very small, intimate meeting of inner city pastors who wanted to kickstart disability ministry in their churches. So I am on one side of the table with my team of disability ministry friends, and on the other side of the table there were a mixed bag of pastors of different races. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, now do I call these guys black or African American? Okay, is it Latino or Hispanic? Okay, there's an Oriental guy down there. Oh, well, maybe he's Asian and not Oriental. What do I say? I'm not sure what I'm supposed to. Finally, I said, guys, forgive me, but I'm going to be right up front. I don't know what to call y'all. What's the term now? Is it, do you prefer be calling black, African American, Hispanic, Latino? They laughed out loud, and they slapped the table and said, you're not going to believe it. We're sitting over on our side of the table. Now, what do we call her? Disabled, physically challenged, handicapable, handicopable, differently abled. You know, you get so tongue-tied, don't you, with all the fancy-schmancy euphemisms. And I told those guys that day, and I will tell you the same thing, there's nothing like a plain old good functional word like disability. Just remember that, you know, it's the person first, right? The lady who's in the wheelchair, or the woman who is deaf, or the young man who is blind, or the child with cerebral palsy, or so. That was kind of a fun icebreaker for that group, and I will never forget it. And to this day, I think what's most important is just remembering that person first and his value in the eyes of God. So I just wanted to share that brief little story and turn it back over actually to Donna, since this is a time of questions and answers. And although I'll be happy to stay up here if there's any tough questions that you guys want to throw Deb's way or my way as well.
Anybody have some questions for us? Yes, Linda.
When you had the kids on, is it on Sunday schools, did you have them in a separate room from the other kids on Sunday school?
In the DVD that did show a specialized classroom, but we do both programs. That's what Deb will be talking about in the next workshop, is doing an inclusion program, which we usually call a buddy program or buddy connection, just different terms where we do one-on-one, and we try to include as many of the kids as we can. We always try to do inclusion, if at all possible. But also, on the flip side of that, when there is a need for a specialized classroom, what does that look like, and how
so
do you do
work
it?
Together
and
to figure
and
out
then you work them together, absolutely. Our you know, our volunteers know that they can always go from one to the other, because everybody has a bad day, and sometimes, you know, one of those kids that are normally included all the time, it just isn't working that day. They're having a bad day, and so they bring them down to our classroom. We're doing the same lessons, we're doing the same stuff, but we can make it a little more user-friendly for them down there, and also it's a little more low-key in our classroom. So those are all things that Deb will be going into in a lot of detail at the next workshop.
You talked a lot about children's ministries and Sunday school type things. Do you have a good handle on how to make the transition into adulthood and have, you know, like adult small group Bible studies or even like leadership roles, teaching or leading Bible studies or whatever? I'm curious as to know, like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people, and especially in Xenos, we do have some things set up for small children, but when you get into the adulthood, it kind of falls apart.
That's actually a great question, because there's a huge need for adult, you know, focused disability ministry programs. And there are, you know, I know of a few churches that I've worked with that are doing adults, you know, special needs classes or whatever. And again, that's, you know, there is a huge need, because our disabled population is aging, so then what happens to them? They get lost in the shuffle, as you said. But there's a lot of ways to set up different adult types of programs, and also to incorporate them into serving in the church. Because Donnie, we always say at Donnie and Friends that if the disabled aren't serving, we're not serving, you know, we're not really serving them until they're serving, because they want to serve back also. And so, again, we'll be talking about a lot of those details in some of the upcoming, but yes, that is a great question, and there are a lot of ways to do that, and we have, again, materials to help how to structure those types of programs.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello.
I'm Eve, and you've come to our church, Hawthorne Gospel Church in New Jersey, to minister to us after 9/11, and we so appreciated that. But we are still a church in need of great maturity, still too self-focused, so we serve in the dark, deepest, darkest area of the New York City area. And our large congregation, there's four of us here in leadership. We so wish that any of our pastors would have come. Mm-hmm. And we are just praying for moving forward and letting go of our selfishness. And I wonder, what are some stealth ways we can encourage our pastors and leaders to grow beyond this, as we are just beginning to open our eyes to disability ministry?
Well, I'm going to invite Donna to answer that as well, but I'll just say to begin with, I'm sure you're already doing this, but pray for your pastors, pray specifically, committedly, and let them know that you're praying for them. And secondly, I think it's always great for pastors to meet some people with disabilities whose testimonies they can be genuinely touched by. The quote that Donna was just alluding to was, it's not disability ministry until the disabled are ministering. And I think that pastors can get their eyes opened wide when they meet some people with Down syndrome or paraplegics or quadriplegics whose testimonies can impact a congregation, but also touch the pastor himself. I think pastors sometimes worry that too much is going to be asked of them, too much is going to be asked of their budget committee. They're already nickel and diming the idea of a disability ministry before you even get kick-started. So having a lunch with a pastor, just asking if you can have lunch together, and lay out your heart and answer some of his questions before he even has a chance to ask them, and just explain what your vision is and ask him to pray for you, and if he has any advice for you, and how he might work with you, or can he assign someone on the elder board to work with you. Establishing that personal relationship with a pastor, there's nothing like it. So again, it's prayer, it's the testimonies of disabled people, and it's establishing that personal contact over lunch. And don't forget, you buy. You treat him. Don't put that on the church budget. But
I wanted to add on there, I apologize, I'm going to tell you right now, I've had vocal cord surgery, and this is about now is about as good as it gets. So if you don't understand, I'm sorry about that. I'll repeat it. But one thing I love, I have a wonderful quote from Helen Keller, and she was asked by a reporter, of all the disabilities that you have, which one would be the worst one? And she said, to have sight but no vision. See, we need to cast vision that these are the people who Jesus hung out with. These are my people because my brother has special needs. So these are my people, and we were not included in church as a family. So why is it still happening? But I think that most times they have to meet someone who will rise above and talk about Jesus to their faith, probably more than they do, you know. But I think a lot of times one-on-one is what's going to change. You know, we're a relationship-building ministry. Relationships are very, very important to us.
Thank you. One question I had, and then just a quick comment, is just even, for example, if my own son is disabled, I never know how much he can really is getting, you know, and he's 18 now. But I was real curious about your gospel salvation story through the colors. And I just wondered how you handle in the ministry. I mean, I have given it up to God. I figure, you know, he knows, you know, kind of like in Romans 8:28, you're groaning, you know, the spirit groans. I believe Dustin's a believer. I'm leaving that up to God and how much he knows. But I just wondered, have you ever been able to see, you know, that someone that has a disability, you're not sure whether they've received the gospel, just, you know, confirmation of that?
Go ahead, Deb. We have lots of stories of those.
I think sometimes we talk about Jesus to typical people, and we don't know if they're getting it. Okay, and so what I love, once a mother I talked to, she used to be like a radio personality around here, and she has a daughter with special needs, and she said, my daughter's spirit is not retarded. The spirit is whole. Our job is to present the love of Christ, the gospel. It's the Holy Spirit's job to do the convicting. And with, you know, as far as the colors on the construction wall, I can go through that in the Buddy Connection class for you. You know, people say they don't have a budget. Well, can you afford 8 pieces of construction paper? And so I think when, you know, just using your imagination, but, you know, God reaches all spirit. You know, when we pray for someone who's in a coma in the hospital, well, we can talk to their spirit. We can pray on their behalf, and God's already talking to them. So don't let that whole thing, well, I don't know if they're getting anything, because I think that's one of the biggest things that stopped disability ministry from even starting. We assume that they cannot know the wonderful news about Jesus. I tell you, they can't.
And just the other thing I realized that God was convicting me on is that, you know, I just have struggled through the years. Dustin can be very loud, and so it's just I get embarrassed easily, and then I feel guilty because I'm embarrassed, you know. But one of the things someone pointed out to me is that, you know, kind of what you were saying, that God had, in Luke 14, God has put everybody here and they each have a purpose. And I had been holding Dustin back from his purpose to minister and to serve others. Because, you know, we can be just in Walmart, and if Dustin wants to pray, you're stopping and you're praying right there in the middle of Walmart, whether you want to or not. And that was just one of the things I realized, that, you know, God is using that in Walmart, you know. People seeing Dustin pray, and, you know, it doesn't really matter whether I'm embarrassed, you know. I'm not embarrassed that he's praying. That doesn't embarrass me, but just, you know, if he's loud, I just need to get over it, you know. But God showed me he's got a purpose.
But you're human, too.
You know, you and Dustin would love coming to one of our Johnny and Friends family retreats. Great, because Donna Hughes and the team at Johnny and Friends Ohio, including Deborah and others, just put on the best family retreat at Shawnee Resort. It's so much fun, and you would be so blessed. Absolutely, hands down, slam dunk over the tarts. You'd just be flying high, you and Dustin both. So consider coming. And those of you who are family members of special needs children, or have a husband with a disability or whatever, or a wife, there's a place for you too. So stop by the book table and pick up some information about the family retreat.
And actually, a story related to, are they getting it, or, you know, are they understanding when we're teaching? Not this year, but a year ago at Family Retreat, we had one of our kids, who I believe was on the autism spectrum, but lay down through the Bible story part and all the different things that the kids do, and didn't participate the entire week. Just lay there. They couldn't get him. They tried to engage him. They tried, you know, just until the last evening when it came time for the kids to get up and perform. Did every movement, knew every word, knew every verse, knew everything. Perfect. Got up there, did it. He had gotten it. He wasn't, from our standpoint, receiving it the typical way. But he was definitely getting it. He got it all. So you never know.
Hi, Joni, I think I had a question for you. And I guess just to start off, I'm in nursing school, and I work with quadriplegics, or I have since like 2005. And I think I have just, I feel kind of silly asking this, but something that I've run into that as I've worked with them, and like I have a desire to really witness to them. I don't know how to go about drawing out them out about their maybe just the fact that they are quadriplegic and how they how that has affected them in their life. And I wanted to ask you, maybe it's, I guess it's different with every person, as we know, like people feel, we run into different weaknesses and different insecurities, but I wanted to ask you, what is the most respectful way to go about doing that with just those that we work with? I don't know.
Well, first, thank you so much for being interested on such a personal level. So many healthcare professionals are just that. They're professionals, and they never really get personal. And I really have a lot of respect and admiration for nurses such as yourself, or physical therapists or occupational therapists who are savvy about professionalism and the limits and whatnot, but yet nevertheless reach out. I certainly was touched by nurses in my own life when I was in the hospital. I remember them to this day. And they weren't believers in the Lord Jesus. They were non-believers, but nonetheless, they reached me in a very poignant and a personal way. One nurse in particular, once a week, she would, got Deb's disease, boy, she would eat her lunch by my bedside, and she'd bring a book of Robert Frost poetry and read to me. Or sometimes the 17 magazine, she'd read me articles and whatnot. There was another nurse who always made it a point to ask me if I was expecting visitors, and if I was, she'd say, "Well, I'll be here about half an hour ahead of time. I'll get you look all real pretty," and she'd put lipstick on my lips and, you know, put blush on my cheeks and brush my hair and hold the mirror for me, and, you know, I mean, just real personal things like that. Just helped so much. Frankly, because you're in a healthcare setting, I don't know that many of these young men and women with quadriplegia are even in a position to understand what's happened to them. I just spent an hour yesterday with a woman who was spinal cord injured in February, and she and her husband are fresh out of the hospital, and I've never seen a woman in so much denial in my life. Just absolute denial. It just has not sunk in. The brain just hasn't computed yet as to what has happened to her and her children and her husband. And she doesn't see the impact this is having on her marriage even now, because her husband is her primary attendant caregiver. And he even said he's exhausted, but she couldn't understand that she had some choices to make that would impact their marriage. So being in such an early stage, I don't know, but I do know that the personal time you spend, the time in prayer, the little touches, the small things you do will be noticed. And when you're sitting by a bedside, there's nothing wrong with asking an honest question. How can I pray for you? What are some of the things you're going through right now that you're really struggling with? Are you having nightmares? Can I pray about that? Just drawing people out with heartfelt questions like that, that aren't threatening and certainly that are welcoming, will go far. And again, I'm just speaking from personal experience as to what really helped me. Thank you for caring so much. And there's, you know, sometimes nurses, I'm just sharing this with you, but sometimes nurses give a Christian book to quads who are graduating, you know, out of the rehab center. Might be the Johnny book, might be some other book, or a testimony of somebody with quadriplegia, Jill Kinmont's book, A Long Way Up, or The Other Side of the Mountain. I mean, those kinds of stories really help. They really go far.
Any other questions?
Deb, over here.
Something that you said really struck me on a personal basis about people not having to have a special background to start getting involved. And I'm from Zenas, and I recall a couple of years ago I was helping on Christmas Eve. We have a like a Sunday school for just the very young children so that the parents can and families can attend the Christmas service. And it was a small group of kids, but we had a young fellow who was autistic, and I had no clue how to include him, right? And it was it ended up being wonderful because we figured we can't do anything else but to show him some love, right? But I realized that a lot of people probably shy away from getting involved for that very simple reason. I mean, I felt totally inadequate. And so what, I'm not going to be, unfortunately, able to attend all your sessions today, but I didn't want to leave without asking, what can we do to learn how to break down that barrier of that fear so that people will take that next step of figuring out what can we do?
Do you want to take a dip? She's biting at the bit to answer.
I always am. We have what we call Through the Roof Academies here in Ohio. And our next one will be August 22nd in Xenia. And the topic is ADD, ADHD, and autism. Okay? And what we do is we pick a topic like that, and we have workshops that do a well-rounded perspective on a specific disability or whatever the topic is. And that's one way you could bring people who are interested in learning how to be with people. I think family members are so thankful that you took the time to be with their child and that you're right now here and crying a tear because you know their need for the Lord. And not only just their son, but for probably the rest of the family as well. And so the Through the Roof Academies are one way you can do it. Johnny and friends, we can come to your church and do a training. We actually do church staff training. So there's an awareness that happens on the staff level as part of what we'll talk about later, which is a Disability Awareness Sunday. So there are ways of exposing people. My church actually has a volunteer program where we're connected with the local MRDD, and we have people who come in who have very limited skills to work a typical job, but it's a safe environment, and my church staff is learning how to be with them and love them. So there's really cool ways that God can do, you know, open the door for you, and that's what we love to do. We love to do that, right?
Yes. Well, and there's things like, you know, churches that have respite programs and things like it. Offer some volunteers. Take some of those people and volunteer, and they'll put you in a place that's really non-threatening, and then they go, whoa, this is easy. I really like working with these kids. This is great. That's how we build a lot of our program
is through our respite program, is we invite adult Bible fellowships to say, give us one night. Staff us for in the crafts and the games and the food and that kind of stuff. And then they get hooked in and say, wow, this is, they go like, oh, well, I guess we can survive 3 hours, you know. And they do it, a lot of them very unwillingly, you know, if they were to admit it openly. And they come out going, that was really fun. Those kids are so cool. And that breaks the ice. So there's ways you can participate with other churches or do, there's a lot of ways you can, you know, break the ice with those people to show them that this is not a, you know, like we talked about the mist, you know, it's not something to be afraid of. It really is very easy, and basically it's loving people on behalf of Jesus.
What time does this workshop? We are out of time. We are, so if you need to leave, feel free to do that, but do you want to go ahead?
I've just been sitting here trying to figure how best to phrase this question. I sense a calling to pursue adult disability ministry focusing on chronic neurological disease processes. And I'm curious, with your experience working with different congregations, do you find that when people begin a ministry, do they already have people coming to their church who have that need and they're not being well served, or is it just build it and they will come type of thing? I'm associated with a very small congregation. We do have some people recently diagnosed with some diseases, and I've worked with Alzheimer's individuals as well, and just feel a heart towards that. But at least at this time, that is not a screaming target within our congregation. And I'm just curious, historically, do you find that once that gets established, that you have people who are drawn to that?
When we go in and we work with a church, we usually ask them who do they already have coming, who do they know of that they need to be serving, and if there are already adults there, that's where we suggest that they start. That they start small, they start simple, and we also we always recommend do a survey, because all that, you know, I can't tell you how many pastors Deb and I have talked to, and they've said, oh, we only have these three people or whatever. And we say, you know, would you just do, you know, run a survey for a couple weeks in the bulletin, and on one side you ask, do you know of anybody, do you have somebody in your family with disabilities, or, you know, that type of thing. And then on the other side you ask for volunteers. And it's amazing that when that comes back, they're like, well, I didn't know they had a disease. You know, I didn't know. Now I know why I never see mom with dad, or I never see mom because she's always home and dad's here, or vice versa, or those types of things. There's always people there that they're not even aware of. But we really strongly suggest that the church look internally first and serve the population that they already have, because that's who the Lord has brought to them at this particular time. And the other phrase we use a lot in our initial workshop that we do in our all of our academies is if you build it, they will come. You know, from what's the movie, Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
You know, trust me. you don't need to advertise. You don't need to do anything, because once you start a disability ministry, it will grow, and the Lord will bless that, and the word will spread very quickly that you are friendly and will welcome people with disabilities. And because that's not very common.
One thing I want to add is Johnny has a great Bible study called The God I Love Know, When God Weeps. And there's actually a leader's guide, a DVD that goes with it. And that's a great way just to start, like a Bible study for people who don't have intellectual disabilities, so they can come together in a safe place and sit at the feet of the healer. It's an awesome book, and The God, you know, When God Weeps.
We also have Bibles available out at the book table that are free. We give them one per church that are written. They're called the Disability Bible, and or God's Word on Disability, I should say. And it is a Bible, it's a New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs, that's been written in a form that is very easy to understand for people with cognitive disabilities, with developmental delays, children, young adults, whatever. It's in shortened paragraphs, the words are simplified, things are explained on the side. We in Ohio have had an incredible response to these Bibles. Parents come back and say, you know, my kid loves this. You know, we've had children, you know, young teens who said, this is the Bible, I understand it. Because it's written really to their cognitive issues and addresses those. And so it makes it very easy for them to use. And we do have those to give to churches so that you can try them out and see if you like them and we can get you more. It's here, it's out at our book table. And like I said, those are free for the churches. And we've had parents come back and say, can I have one? Because my child really, you know, we want to read it together. And lots of churches that we give them one initially, and then they come back and say, can we get more? Because our class loves this Bible. And so that's another great thing, especially for adults with developmental disabilities. Okay, anything else?
Can I just ask who thinks that coming to the Buddy Special Needs Classroom, and if you guys come to that, how about the next one where we're talking about actually getting a disability ministry together? What's good about these workshops, they kind of grow off of each other. So if possible, try to attend at least today. And we're here, we're only a phone call or email away.
Yes. Right. We have cards out on the table, so grab one. Then you'll have our information to get a hold of us. Okay, thank you. With my banana.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.